Well, thank you all for coming to Rancho Ventura's first 50 is Fab event. The weather has been a little bit of a damper today, but we're not going to let the spirit, you know, let the weather get us down. Besides, it's always a beautiful day in the neighborhood. We really appreciate your support. A group of us who live in the south side of the neighborhood decided a few months ago that we didn't just want this golden anniversary to just go by quietly. Besides, some of us are reaching that point, and we really want to get geared up, you know, for that as well. So we thought about how can we really highlight the unique character of our neighborhood and sort of speak to some of the nice changes that are happening, and we thought we would do this. So again, thank you for coming. So here we are in the soggy Saturday morning, and I wanted to just mention a couple of things that I thought were interesting. How much has changed in 50 years? In 57, a first-class stamp was 3 cents, and a gallon of gas was 23 cents. Can you imagine? Gunsmoke was the number one show in America, and the Soviet Union had just launched Sputnik, inaugurating the space age. So a lot happens in 50 years. Our neighborhood still has a few original owners, but in the last few years, there's been a real transformation taking place. We have seen people, in fact, when I bought my house 10 years ago, no one knew it was the Ralph Haver neighborhood. But thanks to a couple of people here on the panel, that has now since changed, and we're going to be talking about that. There's been a lot of people who are very design-oriented coming in, buying these homes, renovating them because they have fabulous bones. And Scott, our architect, will talk about that as well. So one of the things I love about the neighborhood, and one of the reasons that I moved from my North Scottsdale home 10 years ago, was the proximity to downtown. And I hated commuting. And I wanted a place with some character to it. And my dad was an architect. And I just said, I love the bones of the house. I love the shape of it. And like I said, I had no idea what I had bought. And all my friends thought I was completely nuts. What, you're going to buy a house with no garage, or, you know, with an actually converted carport, small bathrooms, small closets. And I'm like, this is plenty of space for me and my two cats. And I was just thrilled. And kind of went back and forth for a while about, you know, investing in the neighborhood. And for me, a neighborhood is about diversity. It is about having a real mix of people. And I've jumped in with, you know, investment dollars to renovate. I did a huge major kitchen remodel, so come and bring your little wet shoes and leave them at the door, but you're all welcome to come afterwards. I hope you do. So how this is going to work today is we've assembled some really great panelists who have expertise in mid-century modern. And I'm going to introduce them. I've prepared some questions, but I would love you all to participate because it's really interactive and casual. So let's go ahead and introduce our special panel here. Our first panelist, Allison King. Allison is a fine artist, design educator, and interactive community specialist. She teaches graphic arts and web design at the Art Institute of Phoenix. In 2003, Allison blended her interest in design, history, and education to create the Modern Phoenix Neighborhood Network, a website and interactive community that features architectural and design history of the modern area in the Phoenix metro area. How many of you are familiar with Modern Phoenix? Yeah. Modern Phoenix has become the city's go-to source for information about modern neighborhoods like Rancho Ventura. And they host an annual home tour every spring. You should go on the website and find out about that. And I hope they don't have weather like we do today.
April showers, you know what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. We have Sean and Tiffany Danley with Niche Find Yours. They're the power real estate couple here. Sean brings a diverse background of architecture and development, coupled with his real estate knowledge in modern and urban property, to Equitable Sotheby's International Realty. It's no coincidence that 75% of their clients are in design or architecture industry. Sean lives the dream that he helps his clients achieve. He and his wife live in a mid-century modern home in Arcadia with their dogs. Tiffany works side by side with Sean at Niche and brings over 9.5 years experience in the real estate and mortgage industry. Tiffany is a rare breed of realtor specializing in modern, contemporary, and urban homes. Both she and Sean are very active in the modern Phoenix community, making them intimately familiar with Phoenix's many mid-century modern neighborhoods. This dynamic real estate duo take pride in promoting and educating buyers of modern and urban lifestyles in the Valley. Last but not least, Scott Osteen is one of the newest additions to the Rancho Ventura neighborhood. He and his new wife, Sarah, they just got married a month ago, bought their home on Coronado about a year ago. They chose to move to Phoenix from Tempe because they were interested in being closer to art, culture, and diversity. They also love the mid-century design of Ralph Haber, something Scott has been studying for years. He's going to be the give us that background. It took them 10 minutes to decide to buy their home. As an architect, I love them. That's cool. As an architect, Scott saw endless potential in the design and has big plans to renovate. Once you get the renovating bug, it just doesn't stop, does it? It's always a work in progress. Most of our homes are work in progress, so you know that. And Scott recently started his own architectural practice, Scott Osteen Projects, which focuses on residential work that with a real focus on contemporary design. And Scott is also a painter when he can find the time. Of course, he doesn't have much of that at these all new beginnings.
Just painting the house is all you have time for now.
Really late into the morning, so nothing like a deadline to get you motivated on your home project. So I'm going to sit in this lovely retro chair. Hold it, stands up. All right, so let's get the ball rolling here, Allison. So you're one of the first people to put Ralph Haber neighborhoods on the map here in Phoenix. Can you share how you developed the vision of modernphoenix.net? Was it a happy accident?
Yes, and if anybody thinks there's any plan behind it, they're sorely mistaken, because it really did start out as a personal project between my husband, Matthew, and myself as we developed our own quest to find a modern home, and we just started taking a lot of photographs of things that we loved and that we were interested in, and stalked the streets of Phoenix to find out where these homes were. And gradually, you know, as I put these pages up on the internet, which is a really natural thing for me to do, people started finding us and coming to us from Scottsdale, and the Danleys got in touch, and people in Tempe, you know, wrote and said, well, those homes look familiar. It looks like mine. Is there something going on in my neighborhood? And they all just started coming in and giving information that enriched our knowledge base. And so we just started feeding that back into the website. And before we knew it, we actually had a lot of content that people really valued and really wanted to use and contribute to as well. So things got a little bit more formal in 2004. And that's when we had our first home tour with the Danleys in Windmere. And that's when things really took off, because we just got the critical mass we needed. That season really is when it all kind of snowballed. And we started publishing more and more content, hosting more events, and making more partnerships. And that's what a lot of it's about, is just making those connections. People who never knew each other before, you know, I didn't know you before today. now we're connected, yeah. You know.
This is really all for Scott. No, I'm kidding.
And you meet somebody, and that's why we call it the network, not only for broadcasting purposes and getting information out, but also the face-to-face network of meeting other people who can help you on your quest.
Great. Scott, so you're an architect and you work primarily on residential projects, mm-hmm. With a real love for modern or contemporary design. Can you please tell us what is the big deal about Ralph Haber, the architect of this particular ranch-style home that we're celebrating today? Why are his house designs so popular, and is this part of a growing trend?
I think the thing about Ralph Haber is that, you know, this is like a post-war period, you know, that started, everybody went off to war, they started coming home, you know, starting new families, suburbia, you know, breaks loose. There's all this building going on in the country everywhere. Ralph Paver was one of the guys that was a real innovator, both in design and construction. You know, there was guys like Joseph Eichler out in San Francisco doing, you know, actually paying attention to design. I think that Ralph Paver was one of those guys that decided that design was an important thing as well. If you look at Phoenix, you look at the residential landscape in Phoenix, there's so much of it sort of matches. It's all very typical. You know, you can look at a house in a neighborhood and kind of nail, you know, this was built in the late 50s or the early 60s or the late 70s, you know, up until just recently. You know, you drive through Chandler, you drive through Ahwatukee, places like that. Things are very typical. But Ralph Paver was someone that had sort of the gumption to come and say, you know, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to provide something that people, you know, sort of an alternative to the typical, you know, suburbia. And, you know, that was, it didn't take off, you know, at the time as much as he probably would have liked. I mean, if you look around, there aren't as many Haver homes as there are, you know, stucco homes in Chandler, of course. But but I mean, you know, I think that's a good thing. But you know, the thing about Ralph Paver to look at is he was an innovator. You know, he was a pioneer. He was someone that took post and beam construction, took modern design, you know, put everything together and provided something that was different. That's why Sarah and I bought the house. You know, in looking for houses, we wanted something that was different, something that reflected our character, and that's what we found. You know, and there were, you know, there isn't a lot of that out there. But Paver, you know, he was one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else on the panel have any thoughts about why Ralph Paver is such, you know, becoming, you know, what him specifically? I guess that's what we're putting our focus on today. But, you know, why he has risen to such prominence. I mean, it's a pretty simple design.
But it has a feeling to it. When you walk inside a Haver home, I think, you can hear this on the home tours all the time, and when people walk into our home, there is a feeling of space and of planning when you walk in that space that is very calming and very orderly but open. And I think that it's sometimes a sense that's felt, you know, inside on an intuitive level rather than just thinking about the design elements and, you know, analyzing it to death. A lot of the time it just is something that evokes an emotion.
Mm-hmm. It's simplicity. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. If you look at a typical house, you have all these rooms divided up. If you look at a Haver, it's kind of, you know, you have your bedrooms, but for the most part, it's just kind of one space. It's one living space, which, you know, kind of lets the occupants, you know, be themselves and do, you know, kind of tailor the space for themselves.
And a trend that we're seeing a lot in those renovations that are happening too is opening it up even more, taking down a wall or bumping something out so there's a couple extra square feet. So even in the renovations, there's a tradition of just opening more, not subdividing and closing. Mm-hmm. So, and it, like you said, with the bones of the house, it just starts to unfold and it feels pretty natural because that was where the original ley lines were.
I think people are looking for uniqueness too, like you were mentioning stucco and Chandler. Thank God they're not stucco and Chandler. that's a whole other discussion, but people don't want that typical cookie cutter. They want something unique and, you know, they want that. I think it's a neighborhood too. When you're buying a Haver, you're buying a neighborhood, you're buying a relation and, you know, sense of community that you don't get in typical neighborhoods of Phoenix. Mm-hmm.
And another important thing to note is that the source behind the modern design isn't necessarily an aesthetic. It's more modernism and modern design is more about a way of life and a simpler way of living. You know, it's about the individual, really. You know, it's not really about conforming to what's out there. It's, you know, you buy a house, you buy something, and it becomes yours, and you tailor it, you know, kind of to your own style. And I think that, you know, that's really what it's about, more than just a clean aesthetic. The aesthetic is kind of a result of that way of thinking.
Are there some distinguishing features of the Haver? Like I said, when I first bought the house, it was how do you say it wasn't considered. No, we didn't know it was a Haver. It wasn't marketed that way, so I got a really good deal on it. well, it's true. I mean, the minute it became identified as something collectible, you know, that really made a big difference. We might be having a seance and trying to bring Ralph Haver back to life. But are there any distinguishing features of the design? Like, I call it the origami house. That's what I called it when I first bought it, because I thought it kind of had that folded out feeling, and the windows were very unique. But are there, for people who don't know, I mean, how many here actually have a Haver? Yeah, it's like speaking to the choir. could you just share a little bit about that?
Distinguishing
features of a Haver home.
Haver.
In terms of materials. And
well, the dead giveaway is the low slope. You know, it's like the double slope roof. That's the initial dead giveaway. There were a lot of builders that kind of had that same thing, but Haver. One of the distinguishing characteristics of a Haver specifically is, you know, you look in Town and Country and Rancho Ventura, they all have the same sort of, you know, there's the choices between clinker brick and block, you know, and brick at the front. The post and beam construction, definitely, you know, Town and Country. And those both neighborhoods are very, very similar, but you have the beams that are kind of cantilevered off of the block that I don't think I've seen anywhere else.
The windows, I'd say. Trapezoidal shape windows is pretty unique.
Is it clear stories?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it varies from neighborhood to neighborhood, but one kind of thing we've seen in common amongst, you know, Alice and I were talking last night, there's probably 13 or 15 Haver neighborhoods in town, and with the exception of probably Canal North, they were all built out of gray block construction, as opposed to when many of the other builders, J.F. Long and some of the other builders that were building at the time, then early to mid-50s, were all building out of red brick. And Haver was building out of gray block. Mm. So there, you know, the block construction is one of the items, I think, that has drawn many people to it, you know, solidly built. And you'll see in some of the other more progressive neighborhoods that have gone really crazy with the modernism, sandblasting and things like that, you know, it's a trait that people can kind of draw, you know, some of the history out of the block and in the exterior.
Okay. Mercedes, you gonna do a raffle?
I can if you want.
I think we're just gonna try to interlace it with.
If I could, I think one of the features is the open carport. I don't know if you guys would agree with me, in patio areas a lot of the homes have.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mercedes is not only, Mercedes is one of the key people that made this event happen. She's also an RVNA board member. She's the raffle queen, and she is a Haver owner. Yeah.
And you know, I wanted to also mention, I agree with you, when we moved in, and it's only been 4 years, they were not marketed as Havers either. So it's really very recently that's come
yeah.
up. We also got a deal for that reason, and it's still, I think, one of the best kept secrets as far as Havers go.
Mm-hmm. I think what had to happen is matching the floor plan with Town and Country subdivision in Scottsdale really is what sealed the deal. That's when I became a believer. that the, you know, Rancho Ventura had some Havers, and we always suspected it and thought it and knew it on an intuitive level, but didn't
right.
really confirm until Town and Country Scottsdale got its historic
well, they
designation.
Got historic, right.
And so they had all the
ago.
Research and they had all of the proof.
Yep.
So
well,
what we're working on.
We're Town and Country, and we're within Rancho Ventura, but we're Town and Country Manor 1 and 2, I think.
Yeah.
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 That's right.
Manor 1,
we're
Manor 2.
That's pretty close.
And then just this year, we discovered another one. A couple people at the same time started
yeah.
figuring out there's one in North Phoenix as well.
Town and Country Paradise. Is
Paradise. And it's on the map now. We put it on
same
the map today,
plan.
So you can go stalk it.
Oh, yeah. Allison brought, for anyone who's interested, brought a map of all the neighborhoods. So
And for the rest of the defining characteristics that we didn't talk about today, you can always look it up on our website.
Yeah.
We have a little taxonomy page that has photographs of every single characteristic that we know of. And if you find a new one, let me know. And we'll add it.
So was Haver the architect, the builder, or both?
He was the architect.
He teams up with a developer, at least in the case of our particular subdivision, Town and Country. Mm-hmm. He teamed up with Fred Woodward, or Woody, he was known as. And that was pretty unusual back then, too, the architect-developer relationship like that. You know, would never have been considered very cool, but he was sort of ahead of his time.
It was unusual for architects to do subdivisions in general.
Right.
You know.
That's right.
Definitely.
So. Yeah, you see more of that now in, mm-hmm. you know, with many of the larger public builders that, you know, are building new construction. You know, they hire out an architect, mm-hmm. and then the developer builds it, and that was definitely ahead of its time.
Yep.
50 years ago.
Exactly.
Do you have anything about the furniture store that Haver owned?
Copenhagen.
No, Lou Register. He didn't own it. He just did the design.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But when you go and you look up, you can see some more defining characteristics with the wood slats and the beam.
He designed that Copenhagen building.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's marvelous. Yeah.
That's a great one.
Excellent.
Yeah. He's designed quite a few, actually. There's one by the old Los Arcos Mall. Bruner's.
We drove
by there. It's a really unremarkable building.
it's
stucco, and
they're demoing it.
Yeah, and it's not that big of a loss, actually.
It's just destroyed.
Have any of the Haver neighborhoods received historical protection so that somebody doesn't come in and just buy a home and do something terrible?
That's a great question, actually. It's we know that Town and Country Scottsdale went, that is comparable to our neighborhood, has gone historic, I think, 2 years?
Yeah, it's been about 2 years.
2 years. It takes a really long time because you have to have a certain number of homes, I think 75%.
Need to be intact.
Need to be completely still intact. So, you know, there's pros and cons to going historic. We've already had some renovations just in our little neighborhood, like, that were perhaps not... how do I say this nicely?
Appropriate.
True to form.
They would disqualify us.
Disqualifiers.
Disqualifiers.
DQs.
Because either they didn't know that they had a Haver, or they didn't know how to do a renovation in a way that would still keep the historic integrity or character of the house, on and on, things like that. So, honestly, would the panel like to answer that question as far as, you know, the pros and cons of going historic?
Well, one of the problems is most of the Haver neighborhoods are in Phoenix, the city of Phoenix, instead of Scottsdale. Scottsdale's really the only historic commission that understands or will respect 50s homes as historic at this point. And so we have a historian that lives in Windermere where we're at, or where we were, and they said the same thing. You know, they have Willow and they have Encanto and they have all these homes that were built in the 20s and 30s that are historic, but 50s, they just don't really grasp that can be historic yet. So it's really unfortunate because every day we see another Haver that's been, for lack of better words, bastardized. And
that would be a good word.
But
there are cons, I think, of the historic designation. And the fortunate thing, you know, when many of our clients are considering moving into a neighborhood, we try to get them connected with people that are, you know, being pretty progressive about the architecture, and, you know, they're sensitive to, you know, Ralph Haver and what he was trying to accomplish back then. So we try to connect them with those people that, in terms, get it. Those that don't, you know, the downfall, if you do go historic and you're one that just wants to express your creativity, you know, the historic preservation will limit a lot of what you can and cannot do as far as altering the house. I mean, our Haver in Windermere, you know, we have a pretty monochromatic color scheme with, you know, gray and black and white, and that might not have been appropriate at the time when the house was built. It was more than likely a red brick fireplace, and, you know, we've painted it. So we've been able to personalize the house a little more. That historic preservation will establish some rules to prevent you from, you know, doing some of the things, good and bad, you mm-hmm. know. So it's a trade-off.
What are the benefits? What's great about them?
The benefits are, you know,
real estate value.
Keeping the fabric of the neighborhood intact is what we've talked about a lot.
Tearing down your carport, you know, to turn it into something else, or, you know, adding second stories, you know, when the neighborhood was designed as a two-story neighborhood. You know, he never had done any two-story plan. So we've seen that happen in several of the other neighborhoods, you know, where, you know, someone was just trying to express their creativity and they're, you know, went through all the chains of, you know, the city, you know, in order to abide by all the zoning laws and everything else, obtain permits, but, you know, alter the home dramatically, you know, by doing some of these things.
Our neighborhood has actually considered putting in place a design review board of sorts, just to try to protect it. We've had a couple that we've lost to poor design, and but it hasn't come to fruition. I think that might be a little bit better choice than a historic, possibly than a historic preservation.
Kind of self-police.
Yeah, because it's not a city telling you what you can and can't do with your property. It's neighbors in the actual neighborhood that get it.
Like a neighborhood association.
Yeah.
You know.
Aren't there some tax advantages?
There are.
And there's you can get restoration grants, rehabilitation grants, matching funds. If you plan to take your carport back to its original, that would be the type of project that could be, I think it's up to 10 grand to match it.
Or windows. Sorry.
Mercedes is really expensive.
This year, you want to give it to
I don't know if you all got a chance to see our prizes in the back that you bought the raffle tickets for. We have a margarita basket, right, Amber?
Yes.
Couple of mugs with goodies in them, two gift cards courtesy of the Vig. I don't know if you're familiar with the Vig up on 40th Street.
A great modern tavern.
Yeah, great building.
And our grand prize, which we'll probably do at the end, is a book called Ranch Home. So I'm going to draw.
Or let one of our panelists draw so we know it's not mistake.
For one of the gift cards for the Vig.
Getting run away, I guess. Probably wind, because it's not close.
And the number is
6229. Oh, that's me. 6229.
Yay!
So
you're taking me to dinner, right?
So we're talking about, everyone knows that the real estate market's had a hit in the last couple of years. And my question is, with regard to historic homes and the Haver specifically, are they holding their value or are they just as vulnerable to the downturn? Typically, what sort of increases have you seen? And what's more important, that it's a Haver or the location?
That's a very hard question.
That's kind of a
multi-pronged question.
Yeah. Havers are still selling. They're not selling in a matter of hours anymore like they were. They're selling in a shorter period of time than typical homes in the Phoenix Valley are. Standards right now are about 92% to 93% is where a home will sell of asking price. So if you're asking $100,000, you get $92,000 to $93,000. Havers are selling right around the 97% to 98% mark. So that's a really good factor. It's holding its value. There's always going to be a demand for them, and there's a very limited supply. So that also helps with the
simple
value.
Simple economics. Yeah.
What is the supply? We have how many neighborhoods?
13 known neighborhoods. We just discovered a 14th on Osborne. We have no clue what it is. Those are just the known confirmed neighborhoods.
Okay.
So there's a couple hundred, maybe less than 1,000, I would say.
I'd say like 300 to 400.
Yeah.
Because there's, 30 in each neighborhood typically?
Well, there's
80
in Marlin Grove. You know?
63 a year.
So if you give 80 for each neighborhood.
One isolated house in Tempe, close to where I used to live, it's the same design as these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's
sporadic. Yeah, and you'll see a couple sprinkled around the valley. Yeah, little pockets.
So with the market again being the way it is this a good time to be renovating? From a real estate perspective, what are some of the do's and don'ts of a renovation project?
I think it's a good time to be cautiously renovating.
That's a cautious answer.
What does that mean?
I'm kind of different from a typical buyer because I always look at a house and say, okay, how much am I putting in? How much is it going to sell for? I kind of have that. You don't want to go in and put a $400,000 kitchen in, obviously, but if you're doing it conservatively and you're thinking about, you know, keeping with the style of the home and, you know, you're not doing things for, you're doing things for your personal taste, but not just specifically for you, I think that you'll be okay. Just don't over-improve. And,
I think really regarding the real estate market as far as Havers are concerned, you know, we constantly, as far as our business goes, and I think, you know, Allison probably recognizes this, there's always been a demand, you know, since the exposure of, you know, Modern Phoenix and the awareness that has been out there for, you know, mid-century modernism. There's an influx of people that continue to move here on a yearly basis that come from some of the other areas, which I think, Claudia, one of the questions you were going to ask. You know, the West Coast probably has more of the prominent architecture that you're used to seeing as far as mid-century modernism goes. Palm Springs. Portland, you know, the Seattle area, the Bay Area, as Scott mentioned, you know, with the Eichlers. So some of those people that are leaving those areas because of the influx in housing prices come to the Valley, you know, and search for something unique like that. And I think the demand is going to stay strong and will continue to get even stronger as more of the awareness is made about these types of homes and neighborhoods.
So we really can thank Allison for the increase. In everyone, she gets a cut. No, I'm kidding.
Well, just to build on that, though, the trends that we've seen, the people who've been part of Modern Phoenix for many, many years, the first 2 years it was, where can I buy, where can I sell, what's hot, what's great? And then the market turned, and now all of our discussion is about improvements. You go to our DIY forums and our marketplace forums, and they are just hot with people having ideas and getting referrals for service people who can come and perform tile installation. And so there's been a kind of a trend towards that, you know, people just kind of nesting and not wanting to fix and flip or wanting to make a buck, but wanting to improve their quality of life. And also a turn towards preservation issues, which was never really on many of our radars 5 years ago, but now it's become a real issue that we talk about all the time in the community.
The hard thing too, and Sean and I can definitely attest to this, is once you've lived in a Haver and you've lived the lifestyle, where do you go from there? You know what I mean? Like, what do you do? It's pretty much impossible to repeat a replica, you know, do a replica.
Unless you do ground up.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely agree with the improvements. People are staying for a lot longer, and I know you've had a question for a long time.
Yeah. Just a quick question. No, and this could be something on the real estate and the aspect of it, but for example, this building here is in the 85017, but you go one street down, it's 85008, and that's all the way through past the airport, down around Broadway, clear down there. And it stretches, even Home Depot is in 85017. How do we go about trying to change the zip code? Because it's a $100,000 difference for the zip code. I mean, on a real estate aspect, like even if I could get changed to 85017 and I'm two streets down, that's a $100,000 increase. And I'm not saying that I'm trying to flip my home, but when people come in and they look at our neighborhood, the first thing that a real estate agent looks at is a zip code. And they automatically pass through our neighborhood because they see 85008.
Well, this I think is 018.
Yeah, this is, sorry, 018, yeah.
Which is the same as Arcadia.
And it's a, Mercedes and I were kind of talking about some of that earlier. It's a twofold thing. In addition to the zip code, you know, you've got two different school districts.
Right.
For a lot of buyers, whether they have kids or not, you know, schools are really important. Mm-hmm. And many draw to the 85018 because it's managed by City of Scottsdale, which is the Arcadia district. Even though it's the City of Phoenix, City of Scottsdale controls the Arcadia School District. So there's two things involved with, you know, the zip code and the schools. As far as the city changing it, it's that's a question I don't know that any of us could really answer.
It's really complicated.
And I wouldn't even say because I'm a school teacher, so I actually know the zip code and I know the kids are with the new change. Know where they're trying to make it all one large grand district, would that be of any change? Because no matter where you're at, if you go up one street, you're in Creighton, one street over, you're in Creighton, one street over this way, you're in Balls, and one street up, you're in Scottsdale.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's crazy because even if you're north of Thomas but south of Indian School, you're going to Tavon. If you're north of Indian School, you're going to Hopi. And some buyers will want Hopi, some buyers will want Tavon, some buyers don't even care.
So you see that struggle even in 85018,
yeah.
And that comes back to schools. You know, Hopi is preferred over Tavon, you know, for whatever reasons they might be. So we see the same thing that you're seeing here, even in 85018.
I think that the one thing, too, though, that's a great, I mean, we lived right over here in Rancho Ventura for
42nd,
years.
Little patio
And we loved it. I mean, I think I agree with you. You know, people don't really understand it, but you get a better value because it's undiscovered at that zip code. You probably would agree with that.
Oh, yes.
I mean, the neighborhood right here is phenomenal. You know, the lots are gorgeous. It's green, and I think it's more of an education thing to buyers than anything.
And it's also pride in knowing what we have. You know, we have a very active neighborhood association.
Yeah.
You know, just getting plugged in. But the education is, I mean, across the board, that's been an issue for Arizona anyway for people coming in.
Yeah.
But it's more so, you know, when in certain districts, no question about that. Do you want to do another raffle?
Sure.
Did that answer your question?
I had heard that there was going to be
Really?
And it was, I went to Home Depot for something, and whoever I was speaking to there, and I don't know where their source for the information was, but I heard that there was going to be that.
That'd be good.
I don't know.
It'd be really good.
I guess if you guys know of anybody, I mean, do we go to the post office? Do we go to the city? Like, how do we start going about trying to get a change?
I think it's based on
district.
Yeah, it could be school district. Because even 85018, if you 32nd Street and Indian School, is a different school district as well. I'm not sure what it is.
It's
at
Crossroads.
Yeah, so it maybe, I don't even know.
But see, that's the problem that's going to happen with if the new law goes in place where
right.
It's one combined union, then they're going to have to do something to zip code change because you've got Falls and you will have Creighton that will be under one umbrella, but Scottsdale will be under that big union umbrella.
Well, then you have Orangedale too.
Yeah.
Just a couple streets over.
Well, Orangedale will be in that category too. It's Orangedale, right. Falls, and Phoenix, and Creighton. And the other one up there.
Maybe write your council.
Yeah, write your local assigned councilman.
Yeah,
you
should find out.
Maybe you can check up on the website.
If I could just add a comment to that too, being in real estate, I think that the media likes to talk a lot about the negative things that are going on in real estate, all the foreclosures and all that, and they only tell you that. I agree with the Downies. The fact is that people are moving in every day from out of state, from, you know, East Coast, Midwest, West Coast. As the homes get more popular, I think our values will really maintain. Again, I say we're a real undiscovered a gem as far as Haver we're concerned, because we're very well priced versus other neighborhoods. And I did I pulled the three neighborhoods, Windermere, our neighborhood, and Town and Country, did a little statistics study, and prices have been steadily going up. Even, you know, I mean, there was a frenzy a couple of years ago, as I'm sure you all know, and even in this little bit of downtrend, they still have gone up, and it's going to keep going back up. I mean, this is not a permanent thing, so.
I think it's the real estate industry's job to continue, and as far as buyers go that don't get it, the education needs to continue, and they need to be valued, and, you know, just like the historics are downtown. I mean, they're gems. They're not making any more of them, and so.
Okay, time for another raffle, and we're going to do the margarita basket this time and a little mug full of goodies. So how about you?
Yeah, do a couple. If you want to read it.
Yeah, 31-6234. 6234.
Okay, that would be me, and I cannot, I'm giving it away. How am I do that?
Yeah, pull another one.
Yeah, I was just supporting. Give it to the volunteers, we're volunteering today.
There you go.
There you go.
No, I'm giving it away.
Oh, you
I feel very
okay,
holiday.
Go ahead. Okay, just the last four, 6237, 831. 6237.
Oh, wait, that's me again.
Now you've got dessert to go with your big.
The neighbors are going to be at your house for margaritas. Yeah,
really. She's going to give one for you.
I like your party.
Oh, are you going to do another one?
No.
Okay. Because we want to also wrap up so that we can get back to our homes and be on.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Something that I think is really unique about Haver, and I've never talked with you, Sean, or anybody else who wants to jump in on this, is there's, you know, within the modern genre of people that are designing these types of homes, there's kind of an anachronistic thing with the preoccupation with clinker bricks and stuff. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or I mean, to me, that's really a defining characteristic of several of the neighborhoods.
Scott?
Well, one of the things that I've noticed about Havers is the texture. There seems to be a lot more texture and pattern in Havers than you see in a lot of the other mid-century modern homes. Look at Al Beadle. I mean, he's very, like, it's on a grid, everything's real, super clean. And
yeah, he wouldn't put fucking bricks on the
wall. Yeah, no, you know, and he did a little bit of that kind of, like, what we call retro now kind of thing. But, you know, and you even look, I've studied a lot of on Eichler, you know, Richard Neutra, Claude Oakland, these architects, and their stuff is so clean, you know, it's so smooth and clean, everything's sharp. But, you know, that's one thing that I really noticed in looking at all the Havers is the clinker brick is really interesting. You know, it's like you throw in this funky kind of texture in there, you know, the patterns and stuff like that. It's interesting. It's so unique.
Now, that comes out of his father being, our assumption's always been that comes out of the masonry background of his father, which is just a really weird and I think that's very special.
Yeah, the clinker brick is the one thing that kind of throws us through a loop a little bit. You know, it's the one.
Can you describe that for those that don't know, maybe?
It's
Allison would probably be the best one to describe.
Well, they're deformed bricks that didn't make it through the kiln process properly, so they're blackened and they're twisted, and you would have a wall like this with. They're almost like inset gems.
Yeah.
They have almost a reflective quality, and every 20th brick might be deformed and popping out, and it's very jagged and very organic, and sometimes they weave under and over in an organic pattern that is just really completely not what you would think modern would.
Drive through your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Your neighborhood in Tenet Country is one of the only few that have
Janet Manor.
And it should never be painted. Never paint it, ever. Yeah. Never never improve your home by painting your clinker brick.
And they did use those in the 1920s in arts and crafts.
Arts and crafts, yeah. It's very warm. Yeah. It's very kind of Usonian. Maybe that's his Usonian side coming out with the wood beams and the bricks. Paul?
Well, does clinker brick mean cinder block, or is there a difference?
It's red brick. It's clay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is it different than the red brick you use here, or
like messed up bricks?
A cinder block. Yeah, the cinder blocks are the larger gray ones that are, you know, the bigger, typically,
aggregates.
Yeah, 8 by 16 inches, you know, is kind of a typical size.
I think they have a new and better name for it, do they?
I've always called it CMU. It's a concrete. Concrete masonry unit. Yeah, it's block basically. That's kind of the
concrete
block.
Clay fired to a ceramic.
I think they sun dry them actually.
Clay fired into a solid ceramic block. That it's cinder block. Is that made of concrete?
A cinder block is. Yeah, yeah.
It has holes in it. Porous water would, in time, flow through it.
Definitely.
Yeah. If you look at any wall today, you're going to see it's been soaked through. Yeah.
Bishop, when you brought up, but didn't Haver, did he actually have that in the design of the house, or was that something he maybe left up to the builder? I had heard something that it was
That's a really good question.
Let's do some crazy with this wall.
I mean, maybe Allison can answer that a little bit better. I mean, it can go either way. I mean, contractors make their own decisions all the time on stuff like that. So, I mean,
I don't know where I heard this. It was like the guys love building the Habers because they can put it up.
Easy to build.
They're so simple. Like yeah,
yeah,
it's just
simple.
Post and beam.
And then you're love building.
Definitely.
We had, this is kind of a side note, but we had an inspection on a Haver that was built in 45.
Yeah.
It was built in 45. It was one of the first five houses that Haver did. And this inspector was just so intrigued by how well the house was built and how well it had stood up for all these years. And it was really neat to see that. I mean, inspectors love inspecting Havers because they're so well built, so.
The inspection on our house, built in 46, he said it was the shortest report he had written
Half a page report.
Are there any more burning questions from the audience? Otherwise, I want to wrap up so people can go and get ready for the tour.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I was just thinking about that clinker block sort of similar to what you're saying. So do you think that the clinker block was actually an artistic statement that he had, or was it simply a cost-saving thing that they could buy those blocks cheaper?
I've heard it both, but a lot of architects from the time, when you ask them why they built in block, they say it's because it was cheap.
Uh-huh.
At the time, very
but
cheap.
But the clinker blocks were obviously even cheaper.
Yeah, they were cheaper. They were just
because
rejects.
They were seconds.
Yeah, they're just seconds. Yeah. So, but now they're jewels. Really, now you would never want to do anything with them.
I mean, I'd like to think that it's a statement of his individual style.
Who
can say, really?
So my last question to the panel before I hand it over to Amber. Is looking into your crystal ball, what will the next decade bring for mid-century design or these homes in particular?
I think we were just talking with the Danleys this month about the future trends too. Is something that we've called mullet modern.
What? Say
mullet. Mullet modern, where it's really conservative out front, but there's a party in the back. And as part of preservation efforts and out of respect for the fabric of the neighborhood, to keep things pretty much, okay out front, but then, out of sight, you can do what you want and have some playful fun. So it doesn't really affect the neighborhood too much. And
you
I would like to
first.
See more of that.
Mullet modern.
Love to see more of that.
Scott, what do you think?
I'd certainly like to see more modern architecture. I mean, I don't really restrict myself just to that style, but it's the language that I love. I mean, if a client comes to me and wants a Santa Barbara house, then, let's do a Santa Barbara house. But that's what I want to see. And I think more and more people are getting interested in modern architecture and mid-century modern architecture as well.
Well, we have so little of it here, so
yeah.
We should take good care of what we have, right? Tiffany?
I think it's going to continue the interest in Havers. I think there are still, with the modern Phoenix movement, there are a lot of people that we see on a day-to-day basis that get it, but there are even more people that just haven't been exposed to it yet. So I think it's going to continue. I mean, everywhere you look with advertising, there are, Eames chairs and Eichlers that are for Windex commercials. I mean, it's everywhere that you look. So I think it's just going to continue and get even better. And more of the preservation aspect, I think, is going to come into play.
I think the baby boomer, too. They're like, 50 is the new 40, so.
One more thing. There are a lot of, since they were built, primarily in the 50s, there are a lot of people that are original owners still there that are starting to move on into the next phase of their life, and there's going to be even more homes changing hands. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
I think, the next decade, due to, much of the efforts of Allison and Matthew, what they've created with Modern Phoenix, they could probably attest to how many new members are generated on a monthly basis. But I think we'll see more changes happening in the neighborhoods, that are Haver and Beagle neighborhoods. I would say more good than bad. I think as the word continues to get out there, you'll start seeing more renovations going on. And, they will slow down a little bit over the next couple of years as changes in the market happen. But I think we've got a lot a lot left out there, and we're still discovering on a, you know, daily, monthly basis.
So a lot of upside. Hire design professionals to do a good job. Go to modernphoenix.net. Go to the home tour. See some of the amazing renovations out there. Really, people who've done an awesome job with what they have, and you know, take pride in this wonderful mid-century movement. And as a thank you to the panelists, we want to be have you out there promoting our neighborhood. Lots of people to thank. Amber Cowart, who's also an RVNA board member, thank you very much, is going to come up and finish off our raffle, thank our sponsors, and all that good stuff.
You want to do one more raffle?
Oh, and Mercedes. Thank you, Claudia.
I want to quickly mention on the table over here, we have some information Allison brought, the maps